So if we had had a children's sermon today, I would have had the kids and all of you come take a look at our 175th anniversary banner, which is over here against this wall. But since we didn't have a children's sermon, let's take a look at it now. I want to look at the little bottom panel that has birdhouses and a bird which represents the Holy Spirit. And there's a part of a verse on that banner: seek the welfare of the city. That phrase comes from our first reading from Jeremiah today. And as a verse that was a part of this banner, it was one of our, we thought of this as one of the elements of our ministry that's really important to us as a congregation, that we are rooted here in the city of Butler. We interpret that seek the welfare of the city to refer to this town where we are planted, this downtown spot where our congregation is located. We live here. We want to see it thrive. And that is why, as a congregation, we have a community meal every Monday, why we open our building through the week to NA and AA groups, and why yesterday many of you contributed amazing cookies and showed up to help open our building for the first ever Butler District, Butler Cultural District Festival. Seek the welfare of the city. Do things that make it a better place. And let me say, it's a very popular verse. But I had forgotten its original context until I saw our first reading for today from Jeremiah. When the word of the Lord speaks this verse, seek the welfare of the city, it's not a word about your home city at all. The full verse goes, seek the welfare of the city into which I am sending you into exile. Seek the welfare of the place that's not home, but in which you have to live anyway. And where's the word of the Lord for us in that? See, the people of God who first heard this word were not, when they heard it, living in their home city. They were Israelites who had been invaded by a neighboring empire, Babylon, and forcibly deported away from home. We have heard of such traumatic events as we hear of Ukrainians being forcibly deported into Russia, sent to Siberia. Deportation is one way that an invading power takes control. And in this particular case, Babylon was smart about it. They sent the bricklayers, the architects, the teachers, the doctors, the people with skills away. Do that and a subjugated land can't build back. Send away the teachers and the people remain in ignorance. Send away the physicians and the people behind stay sick. And the skilled workers who are sent away have to live in a foreign land. A land where their skills may not be respected. A land where they do not know the language and where the people around them do not know their faith. When their holy days come, the people around them don't pay any attention. On the Sabbath, the sacred seventh day that God commanded for rest, well, in Babylon, it was just another work day where people woke up to the sound of clanging hammers and haggling merchants. In Babylon, if people referenced God at all, it wasn't the God these exiles knew, the God of their mothers and their fathers, the God of Abraham and Isaac, the God of Sarah and Rebecca, the God of Moses and Joshua. The exiles in Babylon lose all their reference points, their neighbors, their houses, their addresses, their calendar. They are not home. And if the prophet Jeremiah is to be believed, This was a situation into which God had sent them. Behind the great conflict with Babylon, behind the marauding armies, behind the machinations of power was the hand of God. Now, there are a lot of questions I could ask about that, and I imagine you could too. A lot of questions about why God would deliberately send people, his chosen and beloved people, into exile and into situations of great suffering. There are about 100 sermons that we could be preaching about, that I could be preached about that, but I think you all want to be home by lunchtime. So for now, I want to hold off on those questions, real as they are, and step back and make an observation from 2,500 years distance away from that particular situation. That observation is this. Whatever else we might say about God here, the fact of the biblical story is this. The history of God's people includes times when they do not live as majority people, when they do not have a cultural wind at their back. God does not promise his people that they will always have access to political or cultural power. God does not promise that everyone around them will always know their God and understand their traditions and respect their beliefs. The history of God's people includes times in which people have to live and worship without any help from the surrounding culture at all. And this time for Jeremiah's people was going to last a really long time. It's why Jeremiah wrote to say, build houses, plant gardens, get married, have families. Don't expect to come home quickly, God is saying. You're going to be in Babylon for quite some time. And I think there is where there's a word of the Lord for us, even though when we say seek the welfare of the city, we are talking about our own home in Butler. Because we do live in a changing culture. A number of you have mentioned to me the recent Pew study that was published last month showing that the percentage of Christians in the United States over the last 50 years has decreased from 90% of the population, 90% of the population identifying as Christian to 64%. And practically speaking, a lot of us know those are not just statistics. That actually gets lived out in real concrete ways. The kids down the block do not know that the reason for the season of Christmas is that Jesus is born and not that Christmas presents are coming. In fact, speaking of Christmas, by the way, I think the shift is apparent in the fact that the Steelers are playing at 8 p.m. on Christmas Eve, but a few of you heard me going on that topic, and no, it doesn't matter that they're doing badly. The culture around us is less and less built for understanding of Christian commitments and customs, and it doesn't adjust to us the way that it once did. And many of you tell me how much you worry about the direction things are going and what that means practically, not only for our society writ large, but just for our future as a congregation. And sometimes we ask, well, how can we turn this thing around? But there are really, really, really big trends at play here, bigger than any one of us, and certainly bigger than our congregation. And when I read Jeremiah, I'm beginning to wonder if this is just one of these times, this time we're living through, is one of those times, as has happened in the past, in the history of God's people, when we have to get real about the fact that God never promised that we'll have the cultural wind at our back. This may be the time in which we have to learn where our hope really is, which is not in the circumstances around us, but in the God who is with us, in God who created us and is still creating and sustaining and loving and providing for our world. In Jesus, whose death and resurrection makes every day new. In the Holy Spirit, who guides and sustains us. A time of disruption is a time in which we get to learn the hard difference between trusting human things and trusting divine things. Can we trust in God's providing for us in a time of great change? Even a great change that we feel, even when our address remains the same. Build houses, inhabit them. Plant gardens, eat their fruit. Marry and be given in marriage. Create families. And perhaps treasonously, God adds, seek the welfare of the city in which I am sending you into exile. Seek the welfare of the city in which you do not have the votes. From one perspective, sure, it sounds as though Jeremiah's words, build houses, plant gardens, may seem like a curse. Exile's going to last a long time. But from another perspective, these words, garden, home, family, have another echo. They are the first gifts that God gave at creation, way back in the beginning of Genesis. Exile offers a strange gift to rediscover what it simply means to be a creature of God. In San Diego, there's this group called YIGBY, which stands for Yes in God's Backyard, that works with churches and other houses of worship to turn their properties into affordable housing. The buildings that communities of faith own are too large for the congregations that they have now, and all around them are people who cannot afford to buy homes, in part because of rules and restrictions of a NIMBY mindset, a not-in-my-backyard mindset about building affordable housing. So Christian folks, now themselves feeling marginalized, realize that God gives their land for the marginalized, and so they give that land to build homes, recreating spaces for worship inside of apartment buildings and community centers. It's a new creation for everyone. Welfare for a city sought. Welfare for everyone. Found.